Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte FC has made the playoffs and began a best-of-three series against Orlando on Sunday. Tonight, it is do or die for the, actually, Friday night is do or die for the club. Their second match will be at Bank of America Stadium. If they win, they will live to play another day against Orlando back in Florida. If they lose, well, the season's over. They lost their first match 2-0 on Sunday, but fans are hoping that rest and the home stadium advantage will help keep Charlotte's only winning professional sports franchise's hopes alive with the chance to continue their playoff quest. Defender Andrew Prevett.
We're pumped to have a home playoff match in front of our own crowd. Of course, we'd love to win it here. We wanted to do it in two games, but now, you know, it's a do-or-die game in front of our home crowd, which they carry us. We have a great home record, so going in with confidence and ready to, you know, bring a lot of energy Friday.
And tomorrow is Friday, but there are some things to worry about, and we'll examine those as well as the positives and look back on the season, talk about notable players, read the tea leaves that Coach Dean Smith may be trying to use to craft a victory tomorrow night. And to help us through all this, we welcome back Ashley Mahoney, a reporter for Axios Charlotte, who covers the team. Arturo Uscategui does the same thing as a journalist with Progreso Hispano. And Eric Spanberg, how did you get in here? He's our go-to guy for all things sports and, in fact, all things. He's the managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Welcome back to you all. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Arturo, I'm starting with you. This is a young team in a relatively young league. How remarkable is it that Charlotte FC is in these playoffs?
Mike, it's very remarkable, and I think it's something that all the Charlotte fans should celebrate, because it's only the third season for this Charlotte FC crew. The first season, they didn't make the playoffs. The second one, they made it to the play-in. And now they made it to the actual, what I call the actual playoffs, which is the first round, best of three. They finished the season in fifth place in the East Conference of the MLS. So I think you can see the progression and the evolution of the team.
And Ashley, you have been watching this team because you're a fan, not just a reporter, you're also a fan. You've been watching this team since the very beginning, and because they are our only winning team, I have to ask you, what is the magic here? What seems to be, what have they got that the Panthers and the Hornets don't have?
I don't know that I'd call myself a fan, but I guess I can wear that hat for this morning. So, I mean, if you've been around in Charlotte for any period of time, and now I understand there are a number of people who move here every single day, but you might remember nearly a decade ago when the Carolina Panthers hosted the NFC Championship and won. You might remember that same year when the Charlotte Hornets were hosting the Miami Heat in the first round of the NBA playoffs. They did not advance in that series, but to make everyone feel really old, that was 2016. So Charlotte has not had a major league team host a playoff game since 2016. So let that sink in for a moment, that about just how long it's been. So for Charlotte FC to do this in three seasons, whereas their older sibling has not been there in, you know, a hot minute, it's quite a moment. And they could have their 10th home win of the season. They went 9-3-5 during the regular season at home, so they have a very strong home record. They have a very powerful, electric, if you will, presence at Bank of America Stadium. They're expecting, you know, between 40,000 and 50,000 fans tomorrow night, so it should be quite the atmosphere.
But Eric, I'm going to ask you the same question, Eric. I mean, same team owner, same location that they play their home games in. What's the magic sauce here that seems to be missing elsewhere?
Well, I think one thing that people would speculate on is how involved is that team owner in personnel decisions with the soccer club versus the football team, or the American football team. So that may be a factor.
What are you saying, Eric?
I'd say Mr. Tepper may take a greater interest in some of the decisions that are made on the Panther side, but you know, there's so many things that go into any team, any league. So although David Tepper oftentimes does not do himself favors, to just blame it on him or give him all the credit is a little bit skewed. I think what's interesting is that this team, in a way, has had stability because they've had the same general manager running it all 3 years, but they've gone through three coaches. And the Dean Smith, who I know we'll talk about later, is an Englishman, a veteran of soccer, and has a much different demeanor than the first two coaches that the team had. And it felt like he brought some calm and stability. And at the same time, on the roster, you had the return of one of their top scorers, Karol Świderski, with about 10 games left in the season. And then right before they got to the heart of the stretch run, they went out and made some key personnel moves, so they were aggressive. And so I think all those things have really propelled them into this first winning record in the team's short history.
Now, I know the MLS is not the NBA and it's not the NFL, and this team is only 3 years old, but this is the second time they've come into the playoffs, essentially, and now they're playing a playoff game at home. Eric, since you're the business guy here, what does that mean for this city? What kind of excitement, interest, publicity, money does that generate for Charlotte?
Well, let's start with the simplest part. Anytime you have an extra game or two, you're obviously bringing in another, in mm-hmm. this case, at least 40,000 people. The team tells me they have at least 40,000 expected, and the weather is going to be good, so you could have a decent walk-up crowd, meaning people who just make a spur-of-the-moment decision. And you extend that interest, and the interest builds in any sport when you get to the playoffs, so then that halo effect kicks in. Can you quantify? You know, economists love to fight about this over and over, but I don't think anyone's going to argue that it's bad to have a big league sports team in your city that's in the playoffs and bringing attention. So that is always good. And then, Mike, if they can figure out a way to win tomorrow and then maybe steal the last one as you advance, all of that continues to build.
So, Arturo, you've been here a couple of times this year on this program to talk about this team as it progressed through the season. When did you have a fairly good inkling that they might be playoff bound?
Before the season, as soon as I knew that Dean Smith, yeah, no, and hey, I don't mean to keep receipts, but I did kind of like thought that Charlotte FC was going to be a team that could be, you know, fourth, fifth in the East Conference of the MLS, because I knew that a coach like Dean Smith would take this team to the next level. And basically, you have the same foundation of players that you had the previous years. Yes, and Eric mentioned that, you know, a couple of new players came into the roster. Dean made some really hard decisions to make at the beginning of the year. He decided to let Karol Świderski go to Europe. He decided to let Camille Josvia go. Mid-season, he decided to let Enzo Copetti go, who was supposed to be his number nine. So he made the right decisions to take this team to the next level. And he did prove that his decisions were right. So he proved that, you know, my prediction was right at the beginning of the season. And I do believe that, going back to your question to Eric, what was the secret sauce? I think the secret sauce was Dean Smith, the hiring of Dean Smith.
Okay. Ashley, earlier in the season, you were also on this program. We were talking about Charlotte FC, and we spent time talking about how the team was clearly playing better defense than they had been back in June, I think it was, when you were on. They'd only allowed 20 goals on the season and were at the time the second best in the league. Were they able to maintain that as the season went on?
They certainly had some hiccups as far as, you know, keeping things organized and not conceding goals. But I mean, Christian Kolina is one of the best goalkeepers in the league. He's a finalist for goalkeeper of the year. And he's certainly been a major part of that. Another offseason addition, or pardon me, not offseason addition, but midseason addition was Tim Ream, U.S. men's national team defender, veteran player, years and years of experience playing over in England. And you know, they tried to bring him in at first at center back, and that pairing didn't really work. They moved Andrew Privet back in at center back, and all, lo and behold, suddenly they're keeping clean sheets again, but they moved Ream to an outside back. So you have an additional player there with experience who's really helping them get the job done. You also have a phenomenal pairing in Adilson Milanda and Andrew Privet, who, you know, every time that the back line keeps a clean sheet or they don't allow goals, they get a bottle of wine. So pretty good incentive if you're a wine person.
They need to order a couple of more cases for the Panthers. In the first game of this best of three playoff series against Orlando City, Arturo, Charlotte FC did give up two goals. They were unable to score any of their own. And if I'm correct about this, it was the first time the Crown failed to score since mid-September. Is that luck of the draw? Is it opening playoff game jitters? Were the Lions simply a better team? What's your take?
I think that it could have been the inexperience of some players on the squad. Let's remember that last year when Charlotte FC made the play-in before the actual first round of the playoffs, they ended up losing 5-2 to New York Red Bulls. So last year, we saw a team that was very young, that was very new to the playoff scene. And I think we're seeing the same thing. I think it's just playoff jitters. They couldn't find themselves. We saw Adi Malanda and Privet just making mistakes they don't usually make and they didn't make during the regular season. We saw Karol Swiderski, who's one of the best players in the squad, making lots of mistakes as well. He was not connecting with Pep Biel before his red card. He was not connecting with Lil Abada either. So I think it was just that team trying to find itself in the playoff scene. But hopefully we'll see a better version of the team tomorrow night when they host Orlando City, because as you put it earlier, it's a do or die game.
Yeah. And Arturo, in advance of this conversation, I read a bunch of articles about the team and the season and what happened last weekend in Orlando. And in the Orlando press, there was much speculation about which version of that team would show up to that first game of the playoffs. Why the question? And I guess the answer turned out to be the right version of the team showed up. But why the question?
Well, I think that Orlando didn't show that they were a really good, solid team at the beginning of the season. They were struggling, but midway through the season, after the Leagues Cup, they actually found their own way and started climbing up spots. So we have to remember that, you know, you had obviously Inter Miami, Cincinnati, and Columbus. And then from that fourth spot, all the way through the eighth spot on the conference, you had New York City, New York Red Bulls, you even had Charlotte FC. Orlando was kind of there, but they were on the lower portion of the conference. But then they started playing solid soccer and they started climbing up all the way through the fourth place, and they never let go. So for Orlando fans especially in the press, they didn't know what side of the team they were going to see, but they actually continued their pretty solid run with a 2-0 victory over Charlotte FC.
Ashley, I have about 30 seconds left, but anything similar written about our team in advance of that first game?
I think you'll have to be very patient to see which Charlotte FC you get. Do you get the side that's been cool, calm, and collected, keeping clean sheets and putting the ball in the back of the net, or do you get the side that doesn't know how to do either? And that's the side that you got in Orlando with a poor first 45 minutes on Sunday night.
Well, we'll talk about game two, which is tomorrow night at home here. And that may make a difference because it's the home team advantage that they talk about all the time. We're here with Ashley Mahoney with Axio Charlotte, Arturo Uskategui with Progreso Hispano, and Eric Spanberg with the Business Journal. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking Charlotte FC soccer because they are in the playoffs, game two of their first best of three series against Orlando is tomorrow night at Bank of America Stadium, and we'll talk about the home court, well, the home field, home pitch advantage. I suppose I'll get it right in a moment or two. Eric Spanberg is the managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Ashley Mahoney is a reporter for Axios Charlotte. And Arturo Uscategui is a journalist with Progreso Hispania. Arturo, a lot was made in advance of that first match between these two teams of the contrasting styles of play. Orlando has one of the best attacks in the MLS and the league. After the League Cup break, we are known to have the second best defense by goals allowed throughout the regular season. Is that what this first match came down to? More aggressive play versus a defense that simply couldn't cope?
Yeah, definitely. And if you take a look at the style from Oscar Pareja, who is the head coach of Orlando City SC, he's always trying to attack. I mean, his methodology of approaching the game is always attacking it, and that's how you win games, and that's how you keep the ball, by attacking at all times. When you take a look at the Charlotte FC side, you know Dean Smith wants to have a solid defense, and he showed that his squad had a solid defense all throughout the regular season. And I think it came down to what we were discussing earlier, you know, those playoff jitters, those mistakes, those little details that the Charlotte defense could not handle during that first match. And that ended up deciding the game, you know, in favor of Orlando City.
So Charlotte FC is at home, as we've said, at Bank of America Stadium tomorrow night. They have not lost consecutive games since last August, and they won their final three regular season games at B of A Stadium, scoring 10 goals over that span, which brings the question what role this home game appearance in the playoffs may mean to their chances of going forward. Team captain Ashley Westwood addressed that following last weekend's game in Orlando.
It's just about lifting the spirits. We can't get two down. We've lost a football match and we've got two more to play for. So again, we're going back to our home stadium, and I'm sure the fans, our amazing fans, will fill it out, and we'll train right. We'll do everything we can to put in a good performance on Friday. That's all you can do is forget about it quick and learn from it and then move on Friday.
So, Ashley, these games, when you go to a Charlotte FC game, it's a big party, and the fans are loud, and they're involved, and they're kind of drinking and snacking and watching at the same time, but nonetheless, they're there. Can the fans, do the fans make a difference?
Oh, I think that's an argument that's been going on for longer than either of us have been alive and will continue to go on long after we're gone. But as far as the atmosphere at Bank of America Stadium is concerned, you know, you have this massive venue where you do feel the energy, whether you're just sitting there in the stands, whether you're in the press box, or I can't speak for being down on the pitch per se, would be happy to step down there at any point. But you do feel the energy. You do feel the atmosphere. You have this massive supporters section that, you know, right before the match, they play Pepas, and you just have everyone turning around and dancing and jumping together, and you feel this electric energy that's unlike anything that I've ever experienced in a Charlotte sports venue over my, you know, decade here. So it's something that you will feel a different atmosphere. You will feel a different energy, and the more people you have packed in there, it's not like a Panthers game or a Hornets game when, you know, the Celtics or Golden State comes to town. You aren't sitting among an atmosphere where it's a bunch of away fan uniforms or jerseys. This is your home crowd for Charlotte FC. This is very much so a community that is bought into this club and is, I fully expect, going to be there and show up and support them and have a very uplifting presence for them. We'll see how it all pans out, but that's my expectation for Friday night.
So, Eric, since you're my go-to sports guy on the weekly news roundup, you know that I know nothing about this. And so in order to know anything enough to ask an intelligent question, I have to do a lot of reading. And one of the things I read yesterday was a Orlando publication that focuses on their team. I don't know whether it's a team publication or whether it's a fan publication or whether it's just some people who want to write about their team. It's called The Mainland, M-A-N-E, because they are the Lions. And they wrote that this week that this being Charlotte's first ever home playoff match, he quote, the crowd will be big and loud. So they're thinking about the difference that might make. What is the attendance likely to be for this game tomorrow night?
Well, like I said, I was talking to Charlotte FC this week, and they said 40,000 is their expectation. That is the minimum. Remember, this is a stadium that holds 74,000 people. Typically, they play with a 35,000-person capacity and don't use the upper level. Now, let's put this in context. Most MLS teams play in venues that are roughly 20,000 seats. So there are only a handful that play in these huge NFL stadiums. And Charlotte FC has been second in attendance out of 29, 28 teams, depending on the season, for the past 3 years. So they have definitely established a track record of being able to bring in a lot of fans, certainly by league standards. And I think Ashley makes a really good point. The diversity of the audience and the nature of soccer fandom, I think, are very unique. And Charlotte has really embraced that. And I think that you can feel a different spirit, a different liveliness when you go to a Charlotte FC match as opposed to some of the other sporting events around town.
So following that first playoff match, Charlotte FC coach Dean Smith was asked if he felt like his team was still in this.
Well, we are. Whatever happened, Orlando would feel exactly the same if they'd lost tonight. You know, they'd feel that they was in it, still going to the bank. And so we're still in it. And, you know, the only probably problem with this result for us is that, you know, if we get the win as we want to do on Friday, we'll have to come back here a week later.
That question came both as a reaction to the loss, but also to Pep Biel's late in the game red card. That means Biel will not be playing tomorrow night. Arturo, what will that mean for the team? How important is he in terms of their ability to beat Orlando?
Well, I think it's going to be a huge loss for the team. Because Pep Biel is one of those players that came to the squad mid-season. He's on loan from Olympiacos, who's a team in Greece, and he brought a lot of energy. He is a true number 10, and the true number 10 that Charlotte FC actually has been needing for quite some time. So I think it's going to be a major loss, and they're going to miss him on the pitch. They are. I'm guessing that Dean Smith will play with Leo Abada and Kerwin Vargas as wingers, but the amount of, you know, magic and soccer that Pep Biel brings to the pitch and to the team, I don't think we have ever seen it on a player for Charlotte FC. So, you know, Charlotte FC tried to appeal the red card. They were rejected. So it's going to be one of those moments in which if we end up losing and, you know, getting eliminated, I think we're some fans are going to ask themselves, what if Pep Biel was on the pitch on that night?
And that red card came late in the game with Orlando over the weekend because officials said that Biel had his leg intentionally outstretched, cleats spikes up at an Orlando player, and evidently intent is the key in deciding whether to call a red card. And here's what Dean Smith had to say about that.
At the time, I just thought it was a tangle of legs. I was told from the fourth official that he kicked out at him. You know, and we continued to talk about it and the lack of time added on. And I got a technical warning for sarcasm, which is a new one for me. Never had a warning for sarcasm before. Listen, I've just come in and watched it back, and, you know, I want the club to go and appeal it because, for me, it just looks like a tangle of legs.
Talk to me about that, Ashley. Technical warning for sarcasm. Is that a thing? Why? I mean, he comes from the UK. Is this the kind of warning that coaches get over there, or is this particular to the United States?
think that's the beauty of every league is you'll have your little nuance elements, if you will. And if you look at, you know, the red card for Pep in this league, perhaps that's deemed a red card, but there are a number of leagues across the world where that would not have even been given a second thought. I mean, play would have just kept on going. So it just varies league by league. So everything from the way that coaches interact with officials to the way that, you know, the game itself is played. You saw that over the course of Enzo Capetti's time here, and I certainly said on this program a number of times, one of his biggest faux pas was that he did not stay on his feet. And that would have been interpreted a little bit differently in other leagues. So it varies league to league in the way that the game is not only played, but the way that, you know, officials do their job. So the biggest struggle for Charlotte FC is that Pep is a designated player, meaning he is not subject to standard salary rules, meaning he's the third highest player on the squad. And you spend a significant chunk of change over the course of, you know, the midseason window. You expect to have that investment available when it's crunch time. And now they don't. So they have to turn to Kerwin Vargas, like Arturo said, or Yuri Tavares, Jamie Patterson, and see how do you replicate his presence, because you can't replace him.
Eric.
Yeah, it was interesting. Well, going back to the pay for a second, it's interesting you mentioned that, Ashley, because as you know, Pep is one of just three players who makes over $2 million a year on this roster. No one else makes above $850,000. By professional sports standards, that's fairly humble. But the other thing is, going back to the sarcasm and Dean Smith, you know, his media availability this week, he was still really pretty fired up about this, the red card and then losing the appeal. And someone asked him about the league's rationale, and he said, I told them I don't even want it. I've looked at the video and there's no way that this makes any sense. And he mentioned again the foot of Pep being connected to the Orlando player's foot, and how can you kick out? So this is very much on his mind. And I agree with Arturo that if things don't go Charlotte FC's way, I think a lot of fans and maybe people with the team are going to point to that as a big factor.
Yeah, when I heard him talking about being penalized for sarcasm, I thought, this can't be. Ted Lasso never got a charge like that. Team captain Ashley Westwood put Pep Beal's red card into perspective this way.
A huge blow. He's been tremendous. Even tonight, he was brilliant. He was all over the pitch. He wanted the ball. He's a big player. But again, if he's not available, it's down to someone else to take that chance. And we've got players who are more than capable of doing that.
And all these comments about the red card came in the minutes after last weekend's game, when the coach was also asked about what would happen if his attempt to appeal that decision fails.
If we don't win the appeal, then I might apply to go on the independent appeal committee next season. Yeah.
So the appeal did go through, and it did in fact fail. That was announced, I think, yesterday. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Ashley, Beal's one of, as you pointed out, he's one of our designated players. It makes him incredibly important. Talk about his contribution to the season thus far.
Certainly. And like Arturo said, he is your traditional number 10. And not to go too far into the weeds, but if you look back at previous players who the club tried to bring in to fit that role, the original one who comes to mind is Titi Ortiz. And that might be a name you say, who's that? Well, that's because he didn't have a very long stint here. He was about roughly as long, perhaps a little bit longer than their very first head coach, who got fired less than a year into the job. So there's been a lot of trial and error, and you've seen that over the first three seasons. So when you see a player like Pep come in, he is technically a player on loan. They have an option to buy him at the end of the season. And I think if you see what he's been able to produce for the club thus far, not only in terms of putting the ball in the back of the net and scoring, but also the way he's been able to facilitate for his teammates, absolutely, this is a player that you want the club to purchase. You just hope that it's not Nick Batum 2.0, for those of you who remember that fiasco with the Hornets, where you shell out a ton of money and it turns out not to be a return on your investment. So yeah, Hopefully that's not a repeat for Charlotte Sports.
Talk about
that. Absolutely, Easter egg for miserable sports fans.
Arturo, talk about this, because this is something that I think is unique to soccer, and people who only peripherally follow soccer may not understand this whole designated player business. As Ashley mentioned, Beal is on loan to the team, and we have an option to buy him as a designated player forever. I mean, that option ends, I believe, at the end of the season. Is it likely to happen that we'll pull the trigger on that? Has he given any indication that he would like to stay? Is that even a consideration in these things? Does the player have a choice?
Yes, the players, excuse me, the players do have a choice. And in on a previous interview, Pep expressed that he is here in Charlotte enjoying his time, and then he wants to prove that he is a player that the team can rely on moving forward. And just for those of you who don't understand how the loan works, basically, Charlotte FC went into the market during summer. They got Pep Biel on loan from Olympiakos, and Olympiakos, a Greek club, said, "Okay, I'll lend you my player for X amount of dollars, and then at the end of your regular season, which is in December, you have an option to buy the player from me if you like what you see."
Is he a designated player over there?
No. So okay. The figure of designated player does not exist in European leagues. So it is an MLS thing, kind of like to keep the salary cap to a point. And if you want to remember, this is the second time that the Charlotte FC squad has had this type of agreement with the club. Going back to the beginning of the season, Karol Swiderski went out to Hellas Verona in Italy on loan. And basically, Charlotte FC loaned the player to the Italian side and said, "Hey, if you like what you see, let me know. You can buy the player from me." But Karol Swiderski didn't deliver that much on while he was with Hellas Verona. So the Italian side said, "You know what? You can have him back. We're not going to exercise the option to purchase the player."
So put on your prediction hat. What's going to happen with Beal?
Hey, we need to exercise the option to purchase Pep Biel. And I even said it to some friends after the regular season. If Tepper says, "Hey, we're not sure about purchasing Pep Biel," I think we should start a GoFundMe to just, get the money, go to Olympiacos and say, "Hey, you know what? How much is it? Here you go. We're going to keep
him." Here's a question. I know he uses his feet with the ball, but can he throw? Because there might be an opening on that other team that plays in that same stadium. I don't know. What are we talking about monetarily if we decide to bring him on forever? Do we know?
Off the top of my head, I do not know the cost of the of Pep Biel to Olympiacos. But definitely a player worth purchasing.
So when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Dean Smith, the other Dean, the new Dean Smith, and his magic sauce that he's brought to this team and what it's meant to Charlotte FC in advance of the second playoff game tomorrow night at Bank of America Stadium. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Charlotte FC going to the playoffs and their second game at home tomorrow night at 7:30, I believe, at Bank of America Stadium. Eric Spanberg is here. He's the managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Ashley Mahoney reports on this and other things for Axios Charlotte. And Arturo Uscategui is a journalist with Progreso Hispano. You were talking earlier, Arturo, about Dean Smith and his importance and what he's done for this team and the credit that you've given him for getting us to where we are tomorrow night. Talk a little bit more about that. Sometimes professional coaches and professional players don't always mesh. He clearly does. Why?
Because I think he brings a lot of experience from England. He has experience with teams that might be similar to Charlotte FC, might be in a similar situation. Let's remember that he coached Aston Villa which is one of the biggest clubs in England. He also coached Leicester City. He also coached Norwich City. So he does bring a lot of experience to this side. He does know how to handle and manage players. And he also knows how to work with a front office. But right off the bat, he knew what he wanted to do. He knew what he wanted to accomplish. And he knew that he had the players to do so. And he got rid of the players that he thought were not going to help him do that. So he, like we said earlier, he made some hard decisions at the beginning of the season. He made some hard decisions midway through the season, letting Enzo Copetti go, because everybody knows that Copetti didn't pan out the way we all expected. But in his first season, he already set records for most points in a season for Charlotte FC with 51. He set a record for most wins in a season with 14. And he was the second least beat defense around the entire league with only 37 goals allowed in 34 matches. So you are taking a team that was, let's say, kind of, you know, mid-table to not say mediocre the first two seasons, and then you took that team to a fifth place in the East Conference of the MLS, and you know that took everybody by surprise.
So, Ashley, is it just the roster changes that he made that have contributed to not only the success of the team so far, but also his impact on the team, or were there other elements involved?
I think it's certainly his style. There was a disconnect between the locker room and the coach, and therefore the product that you saw on the pitch with Miguel Angel Ramirez, the inaugural head coach, and then Christian Latanzio, the second head coach for the club. You know, he had a vision that didn't necessarily pan out. And again, sort of a disconnect between some of the players in the locker room, perhaps not as many players in the locker room, but there's still a disconnect between the locker room, the gaffer, the manager, the head coach, whatever you prefer to call him, and the product that you ultimately saw on the pitch. They struggled with conceding goals late. And here you have Dean Smith, who comes in and just takes, like Arturo said, takes this club that was kind of middling, kind of mediocre, had flashes of brilliance, and makes them consistent. And something he said to myself, as well as to a number of other reporters during his early days here earlier this year, was this is going to be a squad that's very hard to beat. Now, you didn't necessarily see that in Orlando. When you come out flat in the first 45 minutes, you make yourself very easy to beat. But this was going to be a club that would be difficult to beat. And you've seen that. You've seen a club that was able to accomplish a number of firsts, not only in the fact that they scored their first goal in an opener ever. Only 3 seasons in, but it's the first time it happened. They had their very first, you know, opening match win. So just little things that, for whatever reason, the first two weren't able to get it done. Dean Smith is getting the job done. So hopefully, pending, you know, this guy falling, he'll be around next year. There'll be a little bit of continuity for this group.
We'll see. Eric.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And I think, you know, one of the things is this club had never really had much of a distinctive personality in the first 2 years. There was a little sort of herky-jerky, you know, it was kind of all over the place. We certainly know that players were not happy with the first two coaches at different times. And of course, that's always going to happen to some extent. But it does feel like, to Arturo's point, the experience of Dean Smith and that confidence in his decisions and the unflappability of his demeanor really settled things down. So even when they went through their rough patch there a little bit, as it got to the mid part of the season, they were able to collect themselves and pick back up and finish off that first winning season, which is huge. It's only a 3-year-old team, but as you mentioned, Mike, and as everybody listening and everybody on this show knows, this city is so starved for a winner. That, you know, if Charlotte FC can sustain this, there's such an opportunity to capture the imagination and, oh, by the way, the wallets of the fans of this area, because they have not had a whole lot to cheer about in recent years.
Yeah. And then there are these intangibles. And this being Halloween, there may be something spooky going on here, because let's face it, Dean Smith's name is famous in North Carolina. The other Dean Smith at UNC Chapel Hill, the great basketball coach. But as Steve Goldberg, writing about Dean Smith in the Charlotte Post, said, even Dean Smith, the original Dean Smith, did not have this kind of initial success with the Tar Heels. It took him 6 years. Of course, this is a different man, a different team, a different time. and a different sport. But Eric, it being Halloween and all, is there just something about the name that might be infusing?
I cannot argue with that, Mike. I mean, if we have M&Ms on the line here, I am going to agree with you all day long.
So does Dean Smith actually appear to be approaching these playoff matches any differently than he did the regular season games?
I think there's the thing that made them successful in the regular season has to carry them through to success in the postseason. And he knows that. He told reporters yesterday that this is the biggest match in club history. And on absolutely 100%. Joe Labou, the club president, has said, you know, this is the type of experience. And now keep in mind, Joe's been around long enough that he was with the Panthers during that NFC championship win, you know, once upon a time, a long, long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But this is an opportunity not only for what Dean Smith called a holy grail moment. You know, he had his holy grail moment in helping his hometown club get promoted with Aston Villa in England, but he has produced a holy grail moment for Charlotte FC, holy grail moments, if you will, time and time again here. And now it's an opportunity for people to say, like Eric said, an opportunity to capture some wallets, not just some hearts and minds of the youngsters, but the wallets of their parents too. But this is a moment where you get to say, I was at the first Charlotte FC home playoff match in club history. Mm-hmm. And if you have been in Bank of America Stadium for any of those moments, whether it was last weekend with Concert for Carolina and the $24.5 million it raised for Western North Carolina recovery after Helene, or the NFC championship with the Panthers nearly a decade ago, you remember those moments. And if it's a moment with your kid, with your grandparents, with your best friend, with whomever, you'll remember that moment for a long, long time.
One other thing, Arturo, that I read about Dean Smith, it seems to have brought the team a certain lack of drama in comparison to what came before. Would you agree with that, and is that helpful?
Yeah, definitely. I would totally agree with that. Going back to the hard decisions he had to make at the beginning of the season, there was kind of like a rumor going on the first two seasons of the team that the Polish were, you know, grouping together, and they had X amount of power within that locker room. And the Polish being John Sobosinski, Karol Swiderski, and Kamil Jozwiak. Well, at the beginning of the season, he decided to let Sobosinski and Jozwiak go. He actually let Karol go as well. Karol came back, but Karol came back with a different role, I would say, because throughout the season, we saw that a young player like Patrick Agyeman was actually becoming the goal scorer for the team. And there was no drama allowed. You know, when Karol came back, Agyeman was still playing, and then he decided to alternate both of them. But at the same time, let's say Karol ended up making that number nine spot over Agyeman, but he still alternates both of them. There is no drama. Enzo Copetti, who he let go of midseason, was adding to that drama within that locker room as well. So I do think that he let all of that go, and that has been making a huge difference for Charlotte FC.
Eric.
You know, to Arturo's point about Biel, if they re-sign him, we don't know. We won't know till after the season. But that combined with Dean Smith, and then you look at they signed six players during the past year to extensions, key players like Kalina, the goalie, Nathan Byrne, Milanda, Ashley Westwood. So this is really promising for Charlotte FC fans, because now you have a foundation in place for sustained success, perhaps, and particularly if you can hang on to Dean Smith as your coach. In other words, this is not looking like just a 1 or 2 year blip. They may be built for some long-term success. Ooh. And we haven't said that again in a long time around here.
Ashley, you wanted to jump in on this. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And to Arturo's point about, you know, the drama, if you will, Karol Swiderski, again, second highest paid player on the team, and love to dive into those numbers and those charts, especially when you talk about DPs. But, you know, he's making $2.3 million, just behind Leo Labata at $2.5 million. So, again, the highest paid players on the team. And like Eric said earlier, if you look at any other league, this is basically pennies in comparison. But you have a player like Patrick Agyeman, who is this young player who stepped in. You know, he is the club's leading scorer with 10 goals. He's making less than $72,000 a year. Now that goes into semantics and nitty gritty things about the league, because he technically occupies what's called the supplemental roster spot. And there's a lot of weird semantics around there, but I think it really plays into kind of tempering down egos of saying, you have this kid who is making a fraction of what you're making. He's not a DP. There's no place for your drama. We don't need you. We can absolutely put someone in there like Patrick and know he'll get the job done. So if you want to ride the bench or not even make the 18, or make the game day roster, if you will, that's fine. This club doesn't need you. So I think that definitely helps in tempering egos.
Before we move on, Arturo, what are our chances of retaining Dean Smith? What do you think?
I think Dean has settled in pretty nicely around the Carolinas area. He has said himself he likes it here. He's been coming here for X amount of years because his son played for the South Carolina soccer side as well. And I think that he is in it for the long haul. I think he's in it. You have to understand that European coaches are in it for a long process. They believe in not only the one season, but they believe in a 3-year job, like 4 years job. Like, what's our goal? Like, what's our long-term goal? And I think the goal for Dean Smith is to win in MLS. And I think he's proven that. I think his methodology and approaches to the game have proved that he's in it to win it, and he wants to make history with this Charlotte FC squad.
Prior to that first playoff game, WFAE's Julian Berger reported that forward Kerwin Vargas, tied as the third highest scorer on the team, was expressing optimism about the games ahead. And when he was speaking to Julian, Vargas asked the fans to support the team and to trust them. He also thanked them, quote, 1,000 times for the full support that they've had since the start of the season. They expect good things from us, he said, that we are going to do our best on the field. Ashley, you hear something similar from athletes in all sports, but this seems to have, at least to my ears, a different ring to it. Am I imagining something here? Is there more of a collegiality, more of a, I don't know, like a high school football team with their fans relationship?
Well, I think at a, like you said, this is a younger, smaller league in comparison to, you know, the Giants that are their neighbors and older sibling, if you will, in the NFL and NBA. So you have a more intimate relationship with the fans, per se, between, you know, there's more distance, more red tape, more safeguarding of other leagues. But you know, there's so much access to this club, and there's such a unique relationship that's been built over the last couple of years. And it hasn't always been like that in professional soccer in Charlotte. So to see the way that the city has embraced Charlotte FC, the way that they've turned out for them, it does seem like there's a little bit of a different message. Winning certainly helps. Winning will solve just about all of your problems. So to see the way that this club is, you know, this club has gone through tragedy. They had Anton Walks, a player who died during a boating accident in preseason last year. So you've seen this club go through tragedy. You've seen this club rally and kind of rise this season. Certainly didn't rise to the occasion last season, but you're seeing that that mutual respect and almost an embrace of the club and the community.
So as we've said many times in the course of this hour, tomorrow night's game is do or die for the team. Team captain Ashley Westwood sees the game this way.
We need to focus, and it's a big week for this football club, and the lads are down. But like I said, we've lost one game in I don't know how many. So we've been here before. We know what we need to do on Friday. It's a must-win game. As simple as that.
If they lose, their season is over. If they win, they'll play another match in Orlando. If they win that, Eric, what happens next?
MLS playoffs are interesting. So you go through this best of three, and then everything becomes single elimination, one game. And the higher seeds are going to have home field. So this could very likely be the last time that Charlotte FC takes the pitch at Bank of America Stadium, at least in 2024. So it would be great for them to advance, obviously, for the team and for interest and all those things. But as far as another home match, that's probably a long shot.
So we're running really short on time here, but Arturo, without Pep Biel, who are the players to watch tomorrow night?
I think you have to watch Lil Abada. He needs to deliver tomorrow night. I think that with the absence of Pep Biel, he's going to go with Kerwin Vargas. And we are all hoping to see some of those backflips he does after scoring a goal. And then obviously Karol Swiderski, who loves playing at home.
And Ashley, being that this is a playoff game, are there any special rules that are different from what happens in the regular season to watch for?
Oh, gosh, I think in this particular one, you go, you show up, you have a good time. You hope that in 90 minutes, Charlotte FC comes away with a win and that it doesn't force itself into penalties.
I meant on the field, not in the stands. I didn't think there were any rules in the stands I've been. Ashley Mahoney is a reporter for Axios Charlotte. Arturo Uscategui is a journalist with Progreso Hispano. Eric Spanberg, managing editor of the Business Journal. Very quickly, win or lose tomorrow night? Arturo, win or lose?
Win.
Ashley.
Win.
Eric.
I can't break with tradition. Win.
Okay. You got it. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.